think we have waited for quite a long time. We want to start. I will be starting by opening this meeting officially. The time now is 9:30. We should have started at 9. That means we are 30 minutes behind the schedule. But I think we will wake it up so that we have the whole agenda finished on time. I don't know whether you have the program in front of you. Okay, thank you. We welcome everyone who has managed to attend. I know it is very difficult on a Monday of the Parliament. That is the reason why we asked for permission from the rich that we can have this day to ourselves at this committee. And the reason for not having it starting tomorrow is precisely because on Wednesday it's a public holiday. So we thought we can utilize these 2 days. We thought as this committee we have to have a strategic plan workshop. And this derives from the fact that one of the issues is that we had our legacy report and what the previous committee has done, and we thought we are going to be continuing from there. But the other aspect is that we haven't attended the standard PF because we had elections at that time. And we thought then we should have the strategic plan workshop. As we were planning to have it, coincidentally we had a letter from from the SADC gender officer and a lady that we have invited to come and assist us here. At a time when we were worried about our strategic plan, she was also worried about South Africa, that it has missed such a lot. And we utilized that to our advantage, and we thought she is going to be coming to address us, teaching us on issues that we have missed. She's going to itemize them. If you look at the program, you are going to see what she's going to be doing. Maybe later give an opportunity to introduce her now. Firstly, let me introduce myself. My name is Rosalia Siorimoruto. I'm the chairperson of this committee, the multi-party committee. Okay. Introduction.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Patricia Chu. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Nokita Heisman. I'm working for the Parliamentary Forum, seconded by South African government, employed, contracted for a period of 2 years by Parliament International Relations. I'm based in Namibia. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable chair. My name is Jake Mabe, representing the African National Congress from Gauteng.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Sharon Pansikopwe. I can't say from, and I'm actually just interested in attending this Congress. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Joy Watson, and I'm the senior researcher responsible for making research support to the caucus.
Good morning, I'm Janet Swanley, another member of parliament. Thank you.
My name is Kevin Lamy, member of parliament.
Good morning, I'm Janice Robinson, and I represent the Democratic Alliance in parliament. Thank you.
Can the officials introduce themselves, because we don't want to sit with people who don't know.
Good morning, I'm Brian Mike, the Community Service to the Caucus.
Good morning, I'm Janice O'Care, and I'm Mrs. Wittemann's Story Secretary.
Good morning, my name is Dumi Mukhorosi, and I'm the researcher to the Women's Caucus.
Good morning, I'm Kashfa Aydin. I'm the content writer to the Portfolio Committee for Women in the Presidency. I'm here to assist the caucus for this campaign of the Islamic across the 2 days. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Raja Zakani. I'm from Parliament Communications.
Morning, I'm Kevin Masinde, Member of Parliament.
Good morning, my name is Amanda Sintan, the Committee Assistant.
Good morning, my name is Nzandla Nyokwana from PMG. Ikamalanda Nzandla Nyokwana from PMG.
Good morning, my name is Ngondi, and I'm Head of Data Business at Group of Women Soccer.
Sorry. Thank you very much for introducing yourselves, and you are, or I've already indicated you that you are all welcome. Maybe let me just say a few things. You know that this year, 2014, marks the decade anniversary of democracy in South Africa, almost 60 years since the historic march of women into the Union buildings. In 1956 and at the end of the past laws in South Africa. Since then, women representation has increased and deepened in a post-apartheid parliament, having increased steadily by more than 50%, and the last 20 years currently at 40%. The 2014 elections have seen women at the helm of both the National Assembly and National Council of Provinces, and about 57.9% of portfolio committees chairpersons are female. Additionally, 43% of ministers are women, while 46% of deputy ministers are women. That's where we are. And without saying a lot of things, I just want to say, this then, that said, there are still reasons to be vigilant about women's rights. And representation, the overall representation of women has declined by 1%. While numbers in the NCOP suggest that only 18% of committees are headed by women, also the NCOP does not have a designated committee mandate to deal with women issues, and this responsibility has been given to the Select Committee and Corporate Governance, which also deals with traditional affairs, public service and administration, youth and intergovernmental relations matters in the broader society gender counts. While all household income increased between
2001 and 2011. Female headed households in 2011 were earning only slightly more than what male headed households were earning in 2001. The recent crime statistics saw a decrease in most crimes but an increase in sexual crimes, which are mostly against women. You know what is happening, we have seen a lot of this. In addition to the risk of violence, women also face a range of health risks, including sexually transmitted and reproductive tract infections. To me, this is very important, especially the reproductive tract infections. It also includes HIV and AIDS, and cervical cancer and maternity-related complications. South Africa is one of the highest HIV prevalence in the world, with women being the most infected as well as affected. Women have disproportionately higher infection rates than men due to both biological and economic vulnerability that they are exposed to. These developments highlight the importance of mechanisms for advancing women's empowerment and the protection of women's rights, and do not backslide and lose ground where progress has been made. I've already indicated that the previous parliament, what they have done in the past. But the Multi-Track Women's Caucus, the Portfolio Committee on Women, and the Select Committee on Corporate Governance are important structures in ensuring that women remain on the agenda of Parliament, and that concerns are women need to progress. And I think this is why we are here, and we are concerned about the women. And we think that as this committee, we have a responsibility that we should see that we deal with these matters, and within the strategic plan that we are going to be putting together here, we have to take into consideration all what I have just said here. Yes, we are wishing to be leading on gender presentation in South Africa. Madam Nomchita is going to be telling us where we are, but I think we've got a bigger responsibility, that of Parliament also understanding it mustn't be a one party thing, it must be all parties. We are not going to force other parties, but I think it must be an understanding of all women, it mustn't be an understanding of one party. I think that is one of the reasons that we have the multi-party women's caucus. Thank you very much. We are going to go to the next item on the agenda. The next item would be the program and objectives report on SADC-TF Regional Women Parliamentary Caucus Resolution on the 25th of the 6th month, 2014. This is going to be done by the SADC PF General Officer, who's Madam Nomchita. Let us welcome her, and she's going to give us the objectives.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. First and foremost, I want to thank you, Chairperson, and to your committee for giving me this opportunity. I was sharing with the members, Honorable Rani, that the exercise we are undertaking, I was late to have started in Malawi, but I have not managed due to financial resources by the Parliament of Malawi. They are trying to raise funds showing that we're fortunate that we have our own resources in South Africa to work with. Because all my expenses, traveling and accommodation, are covered by the government. Thank you very much. Before I say anything, Honorable Chairperson, I'm bringing you, she was meant to do something in writing, our Chairperson, Honorable Nyeleti Mondlane, she's sending her warm greetings, which she is the Chairperson of the Regional Women's Parliamentary Caucus, a member in the Mozambique Parliament. She was meant to should have written something, but she sent her apology and just dropped me a line Saturday saying, please convey the message, the greetings, warm greetings, well wishes, saying the exercise we are undertaking as the caucus, we might not be aware how serious it is. It is very serious. And also she wishes to congratulate the committee to start on a good footing. She also said, as Frelimo, they have cheated the 50-50 quota required by the subject gender protocol. That means that they have followed the footsteps of the government party in South Africa in the early preparation for the elections of 2014. They have got 50% women and 50% men. It deals with the better leading approach. Yes. But saying they are never, because they know the ruling party of South Africa, approached it in the same way. They don't know where it went wrong. But they never said part of it. That is the government party, they can have a 50%. What about the smaller parties, the opposition parties? And also, she said I must convey this message that they are going to elections on the 15th of October. Hence, she was unable to do her wishes in writing. I found her leading the delegation of Frelimo for something in Dar es Salaam. And she said also, SWAPO in Namibia has also done the 50-50 quota. 50% representative of women in their list and 50% representative of men in their list. They are going also to elections around about the 6th of November. We are waiting for the president to announce. That's Trump. Thank you. Presently, as RTF, I missed that one because South Africa jumped too and were very quick to come up with the date. Were engaged in a big mission to Namibia to encourage all the parties to do the 50-50. Today is the deadline. So we have the delegation from the Regional Women's Parliamentary Caucus. We are meeting the governing parties, chief whips of all political parties in the parliament, civil society organizations, led by the RWP, the Regional Women's Parliamentary Caucus. We've missed Mozambique, and we also missed South Africa. We didn't do that in South Africa. These are the warm greetings from the Honorable Nyeleti Mondlane, the Chair of the Regional Women's Parliamentary Caucus. So thank you. But having said that, we have the purpose of the workshop to provide a platform for the Multi-Party Women Caucus. Provide a platform for the Multi-Party Women Caucus members to discuss issues relevant to female members of Parliament and to agree on pertinent priorities and programs to be pursued by the caucus. that's the purpose of the workshop. Of course, we hope that by the end of the workshop, we'll have a reaffirmed strategic objective and business plan, 6 months, until the end of financial year, March 2015. The outcome is to facilitate the common understanding of the work of women.
What is the question about the technology?
Okay. Otherwise, the honorable member is in this favor. To facilitate the common understanding of the work of the women caucus, specific activities for the next year should be planned. That's what we want to find out at the end of the day, which is very, very important. We have the program in front of us, but while we're still working with the technology, I want to commend the Honorable Chairperson about the technology that we use here. For instance, we have the multi-party women's caucus. And commend and say, I think we are the only country in the region that uses the MTWC. All other countries use the National Women Caucus. And I think it's a choice of the term multi-party because the caucus are supposed to have all members of various political parties because the challenges are the same. But in other sister countries, the 14, it's called the National Women Caucus, which sometimes you'll find that not all parties are there. It will be one party that is the governing party most of the time. And then the rest is the caucus. We are using two terms, female and women. At a certain stage, maybe even if it's not today, we need to look at the terminology, the difference between the female and women, because they mean different things. If you talk of female, you are talking about the biological makeup of each one of us as women. And if we talk of women, we are talking about socialization. That you are a woman, you are expected to behave or to do certain things. So we need to agree on those. Maybe something we need to take note of, but not in today. And then we move on to say, before I talk about the RWPC, the 25th of June, RWPC meeting in Mauritius, I wish to those who have been exposed to the Senate PF, Senate Parliamentary Forum, where I work. The Parliamentary Forum is a restructuring towards moving towards being a parliament of the region, which has forced the now it's no longer going to be SADC Parliamentary Forum. It's going to be a SADC Parliament. So we are expected to do our business as the Parliament. So we are moving away from having the contract side, which was never exposed to, of our meetings. We have meetings twice a year. We have, for the first time in Mauritius, we had parliamentary processes where members presented motions, resolutions to the House, and some were adopted and some were put on ice to defend for the next meeting. We are operating like a parliament. As a result, we have various standing committees. As a gender president, I'm responsible for one committee, standing committee, which is called a committee on gender equality, women's advancement, and youth development, which means we are a bit behind to South Africa, because South Africa has got a committee on women's affairs, and I guess the SADC-PF committee has got an element of gender in it, which makes it a very huge committee, which might not be able to do everything. And then over and above that, I'm responsible for the Regional Women's Parliamentary Caucus, which is not a fully fledged technical committee. I will share the difference between the two committees in my presentation. Honorable Chairperson, I decided that before I look at the resolution, perhaps it's worth sharing with the caucus our understanding of the caucus as such a parliamentary forum. It's based on the research, the desktop research. It said the first step in the political empowerment of women is to ensure a critical mass of them are elected to a parliament through an electoral system. The 50-50 we were talking about. It could not happen without the standard protocol on gender and development. But the border remains in the court of every country. Whether the countries come up with a legislation that enforces the contract system. But once women are elected to parliament, what tools are available to promote women's empowerment from within the institution? One common measure is the multi-party women's caucus. Unfortunately, in advance we are talking about the caucus, worldwide, including in the region, I'm sure including here, in various other countries in the region. The caucus is not a structure that is taken seriously. Am I correct? Even by us women, if we were serious, I am not suggesting that people don't have commitment. The house is supposed to be full. And you find that sometimes when the caucus is supposed to meet, there are other standing committees with meetings, and women will go to other meetings instead of coming here. And yet the caucus is supposed to be a very powerful structure in any parliament. Reflecting on what is happening in the SADC PM, I said we have the secretariat, that is our endpoint. Just below the secretariat, we have the executive. The executive have got members from various standing committees. The chairperson of the RWPC, according to the rules of Asia, sits in the EXCO, but has no voting power. That is the major weakness that I picked up when I looked at the document. That is, you know, as women, we need to correct this as the women's caucus. That we can't have a person who sits in the committee. It's just there. When you vote as the RWPC, as the SADC-EXCO, the chairperson of the RWPC does not have voting power. And when we meet, like when you go to the assembly, we're going to DRC in November. All the standing committees are given a day each to have a fully fledged meeting. But if it's the women's caucus, they are given half a day from 2 o'clock up to 5 or 6, and by the time it's 6 o'clock, the man is special with the dead is standing at the door. You know, if the protocol officer keeps on keeping to the door, but I need behind time. We have no time. And the man will say, relax, we are going to continue on until 8 and 10. They've done it deliberately, but they give us only the afternoon, and where all other committees are given the whole day. These are the charm of the challenge facing the women's caucus. Sometimes we get discouraged and say, let's not forget about it. But what you say if there are standards, international donors like your UN women, they want a disorganized structure saying we want to do ABCC post-2016, we want to use RWC. The reason why is organized, it's got a voice, they can make noise. But you hear how people address this issue and hear people saying that it's just a body of for lobbying and advocacy. Listen to the language. It's just a body, group of women for lobbying and advocacy. And yet we're not just a group of women. We can do things and things that can be seen. The definition, the various definitions of the Multi-Party Women Focus. It is an unofficial group of women MPs as compared to an official parliamentary committee. I'm comparing it to the caucus with the committee. The committee is a standing committee with all the resources. Thinking about it, it's only South Africa that has got researchers, secretaries, PAs to the deficit. It's very organized. You can't find it in other countries. It is really a caucus that meets well as a time. Varies from parliament to parliament, but generally includes the regular meetings in which the MPs discuss issues of concern to them about being a woman MP across party lines. Honorable members, the meeting or not, you know, when we meet as women, it doesn't matter whether you are from ASP, from VA, from AN, at the end of the day, we bring the same problems, the same challenges. And this is the only platform where we can express them, empower each other. Concern to them about being a woman across party lines, advocacy for women's issues in general. This is the structure that is supposed to make a lot of noise. But you can't make noise if you don't have researchers. That's what makes the Women's Caucus of South Africa better. It's a good researcher. Access to support and knowledge to improve their capacity as MPs. If it's not resolved, if there are no researchers, they don't have funds to do things like this. They will be just members who are there to fill in numbers. And don't be mistaken. Other parties will put women so that women can say, at the end of the day, will say, this thing of affirmative action does not work. How can it work when you don't support women? You need to level the playing field. And not just say, put as many women as you can. For example, one of the procedures in Clarity Games is that we should have in the Secretariat representatives, people from all the countries. But when it's convenient, you find that people say, we must get someone from this country. How do we get someone who is not competent? You want to say affirmative actually does not work. If we don't have competent people from this country, why don't we wait? Or we make the point that we headhunt. Or as women, we make a space that we empower each other. We're not women who are supposed to support everything. Another benefit, providing space for women to meet and discuss issues of common concern across party lines in their own spaces. Women, it is very important. We need that space. Just like the church, other union meet every Sunday, and it's a space that was given to them. They fought for that space. They can meet on this day, discuss their own things. Where group is well organized, the issues discussed can be brought back to the various parliamentary groups and committees. In turn, to the parliamentary draft legislation, committee investigation, or other methods of promoting admin action. What this means? You are here in the Women's Caucus. You belong to other standing committees. Issues that you discuss from this committee, from the caucus, you have a right to take them to a standing committee. That's the leader's advantage. And say, for instance, there's this main issue on health, as Chairperson has said. You've heard it here. You take it to the committee of health. And it deeply affects the very child who's supposed to be in school, in primary school. Take it to the committee of education. Fortunately, you won't be alone. There will be other women who are in the caucus to support you. That's the value of the women's caucus. Allowing for direct support, women in prison to allow them to build their capacity as MPs, recognizing the special challenges faced by women in Parliament and across the party line. Yes, there are differences between men and women. Because we are in Parliament, doesn't mean that your reproductive roles are going to leave them at the gate. While you are here, there are certain issues that want you at the household, maybe. There's a child that is sick, or it's holiday, the Parliament is still open. Do we have facilities to support women and even men who have school or age-going kids? Facilities that will enable you that while you're working in committees or in the offices, there's a facility for children so that you are happy that my child is within reach. I'm not worried that my child is being abused or someone. Or organize meetings in such a way that you are sensitive to women's issues. While you are in the meeting, you are thinking, I wonder if there's food at home. If there is food, is it cooked? Is the uniform for children ready? You know? Homework. These are the issues facing women. And these are the issues that you discuss in the Women's Caucus. Because you cannot take them into standing committee. And you make a proposal even to the Parliament, to the Speaker, that as the Women's Caucus, we feel we need support. Because, you know, South Africa has got this thing of intergenerational mission. In the country, there were most of the members were matured women who didn't have the young kids, who are not just newlyweds who still have planning to have kids. Things have changed. We have young members who seek maternity leave. What do we do about the babies who have the maternity? It is an important voice for women in a country. As this can be perceived as a group of senior political leaders who are working across party lines to effect change, that is positive for women in the general public. You bring the issues and the struggles. Because when I say you are not really representing women in the parliament, you bring issues from the classroom, you bring them here. Fortunately, you have researchers. You ask your researchers, can you focus on this? What advocacy can we have around this issue? And you know what? As grassroots sitting in our homes, you see these powerful women. And then, my God, you don't know what you are doing. You are motivating a girl child. A girl child who has no role model. These are the multiplying effects of the Women's Caucus. Unfortunately, sometimes you don't even see it when you have your committees, your meetings and TV. Maybe something that we need to look at. Because we did some big things which are supposed to be aired by people. It is a cause of hope to young budding feminist politicians. My secretary general, our CEO, does not like my language. He doesn't even like to carry this down country. The moment you talk about feminism. Young budding feminist politicians, e.g., unintended outcome of the role played by RWTC. Its members are role models to young women as they can see women can be actively involved in party politics. Young women, unemployed young women who are still starting with their careers, young women who are at university, you are their role models. When they see Honorable Mame talking in Parliament, you will say, she's so young. Look at her, how vocal she is. No. I want to be like Honorable Shwane one day. Because they've seen your work as the Women's Caucus. So in other words, though you don't have girls that you are mentoring, unintentionally, there are girls looking at you, how you do your work as the Women's Caucus. I've painted the glory, the very beautiful picture. The Women's Caucus has got challenges also. Number one, when there is an established parliamentary committee on women's affairs, such a caucus can cause some confusion with regard to money. I'm sure we're back to that thing. Have we not had South Africa? Role confusion, what does the Women's Caucus do? What does the Women's Affairs of Standing Committee? We are faced with that challenge at 7 p.m. As a result, when colleagues say, you can call a chairperson of gender and RWPC, I say, let's draw a line. This is an RWPC issue. The campaigning for 50-50 should remain with the RWPC. This Committee on Women's Affairs is supposed to do an oversight role on gender issues. You get what I mean? So there's that challenge, because the line is standing in between them. You find it every now and again, they step onto each other's toes. And then there was a man I watch and say, oh, these women are the best to fight against. Go and do your fighting. It ends up being a joke. But it's a role clarification and role confusion. I think tomorrow we have an item, the Honorable Judith, to talk about the role. Am I correct? The role of the multi-party women caucus. Recent history shows that many of these caucuses fail because women MPs are first and foremost members of parties. Women MPs will listen to their party. If the party says, we can invest our time on this women caucus thing, go to other family committees. You are going to listen to your party. Then, and if you are women in that political party, you are not strong. You should be strong as the women in the political party to say the women caucus is not negotiable. Because we can talk at this level, but if at the political level, we are not strong as women. Not just wasting time. Because we need to penetrate at that level. And parliamentary groups, committees, therefore having their priorities confused. Women belong to political parties, women belong to standing committees, and they're the women's caucus. Which one do we prioritize? You are fewer in the parliament, you are spread thinly. Sorry, you have that challenge. Fortunately, Honorable Chairperson, as you said when I came in, I know the thing. We went to 209 with the previous caucus. These were the challenges. Waiting, sometimes women don't show up. We end up starting. And I have this, until we start, something is going to happen. And let's not expect it in a minute. Some people are waiting to see, I wonder how far they should go. And if something happens, they will start to move on. Because this is a platform where you even practice to talk. If you are not a public speaker, you talk in this platform and you affirm each other. You know, I once read an interesting research by Reverend Paul Tutu, daughter of Bishop Tutu, for her PhD. She looked at the history of women manyano, where it came from, and why the space for women. Men didn't want to. So, you know, you have this mainstream church on Sunday, that is why you want this space. And women were active to preach and interpret the word according to the women's needs. And they prayed for their sons and husbands who were migrant laborers, saying, for instance, if you hear that there's a disaster in some mine, women will pray. And those who don't return back, women will pray on Thursday until they return back. So it's a space for us to grow. And here we go, very soon in the 80s, the Anglican Church started to say you can have leanings as well, women. Tell me, if women didn't have the space to practice, to preach, what would they do? And very soon they were ordained. And men would say, we've given you the space, but you can't even preach. Or if you are teaching, you preach the same thing as you preach the banana. Are we able to interpret it with the women's eyes? I'm just giving examples, right? Can you use this strategy to keep the multi-party women's caucus alive? It must acknowledge the strength of the parliamentary committees within the parliament and work with them to achieve its goals. We are a caucus. We don't want to be a body, right? That's the first thing we need to agree on. But how do we infiltrate and influence the committees? In other words, let's take issues that we discussed here
and take it to the community to sustain the committees which are recognized. Efforts to support women MPs must not solely focus on an unofficial multi-party women's focus, but on official groups within the parliament, e.g. committees, parliament groups, to ensure the MPs build their capacity and their ability to lead within such groups. Yes, we are this caucus. We have this voice that we wanted to be strong. Let's not waste time to want to say we want to convert it into a committee. Let's build our capacity to such an extent that you get elected to change the committee of defense, for instance. You are able to say, hey, women are moving. Not just be handpicked or to find out you don't have the skills. Because the caucus is also supposed to identify and train needs of women, your leadership skills, your public speaking skills. Other people are very good but scared to talk in public because they have never did that before. So the caucus are supposed to build the capacity of women. The moment you recognize that, okay, this is an informal group, but they have got a lot of potential. Let's strategize and say, let's talk about women. We want so many women to chair committees. For instance, we're going to 2015, the end of the Sagittarius Protocol agenda. What do we do about 50-50? We've been advocating for 50-50 representation. Here are the women in parliament. Where are they? What are they doing? Which committees are they chairing? How many have progressed to such an extent that they are chairing now, they have become a cabinet minister? Amongst others, the multi-party women caucus can play the following role. Okay. Now I want to talk about the study PF, Honorable Chairperson. My apologies for diverting so much. It's because I'm talking about a topic that I like, the multi-party women caucus. If we look at the SADC-PF Parliamentary Forum, Regional Women's Parliamentary Caucus, which is equivalent to the one in each country, but this one is for the region, where all chaplains are members. This is the one that is chaired by Honorable the Lady Monsani currently. If she returns to the Parliament and still holds that position of being the chairperson of the multi-party women's caucus of Mozambique, she will continue chairing. If she is no longer, she cannot be our member. If she is employed somewhere else. The core function of the RWPC is to lobby and advocate for equal and equitable representation. In other words, this RWPC draws its strength from the SADC Protocol on Gender and Development, Article 12 on governance, specifically Article 12.1, representation, that is the gender protocol signed by all heads of state, except Mauritius and Botswana, representation of women in political and administrative decision-making positions. That is the Article 12.1, is from that Article 12 on governance. So in other words, the RWPC looked at that out of the 28 articles, we will take one article 12 on governance. And out of Article 12, let's look at 12.1 representation and champion the 50-50 gender equality representation by 2015. And it's not something that they just read off. It's something, it's a policy issue. It's from the SADC Protocol signed by all heads of state in 2008. By 2050, we will have 50-50 representation by all countries in the region. So the Regional Women Parliamentary Caucus is championing that. For instance, when I joined in March, Seychelles was number one in the region. After Seychelles, it was South Africa. And then you get your countries like your Mozambique after South Africa and many other countries. South Africa was one of the countries that we all said we are doing 2015 with 50-50 representation. All the heads of state signed, except two countries, in Mauritius and Botswana.
in other words, they are not committed to anything. You can't say come and attack because they have not signed anything. But when they are asked to come and account when you meet, they will tell you that, you know, as Mauritius, we've moved so far, as Botswana was moved so far, but what's the problem? There's nothing binding there. They can say, at the top of the head and say, no, one of us does that. Continue with it on your own. There are countries that are really struggling. Countries like Switzerland. But not, yes, Switzerland signed, I think, for compliance purposes. And women in Parliament were handpicked by the king. And there are very few of them. Very few of them. Somebody there. You know, when you meet as the RWPC, you can understand also the kind of countries that members come from. You are talking about, for instance, gender-based violence, rape. You hear a member saying, let's not forget about men who are also abused. My chairperson was very rare and say, okay, we've taken a point, but who is most abused? So we are able to weigh and say, this country is a bit behind us. Amongst others, the RWPC, as the person said, South Africa made the first meeting in Malaysia. And I did you too. That was in June. There was a rumor that there are certain people coming from South Africa. And then while we were there, we received a letter of apology. It's not like when you see members from the country arriving, and you are told your speaker is arriving, and you take that case, join the protocol team to go and welcome your members at the airport, your speaker. People from various countries must go and brief the members from their cabin about what is happening. We had also the opportunity to gossip with the members and see different businesses, everything with different businesses. They're going to ask for it. The RWPC lobbies and advocates for the implementation of the Sanitary Protocol of Gender and Development. How they do that? They go to countries. The starting point for us is to ensure that every country has a multi-party network. I've seen documents in the office. Another mission was led by Honorable Lani to the mother. We said, God, for this great output. For instance, we need to Zimbabwe change its constitution. If you read it, like South African constitution, but you've got a time frame. And within 10 years, we're changing the constitution to go back to our drawing board. Like after the election, the Senate got 44% of women. It's what we call NCOP. And then the National Assembly, 35%. And the chairperson of the Women's Caucus said, you know, we were healthy by legal document, legal instrument, which is what is missing in our country.
I don't know.
Maybe when we do the barometer, but maybe with the legislation to enforce this code. But it's entirely upon us. It's got its own advantages and disadvantages. But looking at how we're doing, regressing has been a very great process. Conduct election observation mission from gender perspective. We had a lot of discussion about that one. You know, for instance, when you do election observation mission, you don't only go when the election, you go there to look at the remedies. And we were saying in Mauritius, we need RWPC members to be present. But women were so generous. Now let's give also other members in our parliament. But they go as women from your parliament, but they don't have the mandate of RWPC. You get what I mean? Other countries don't use PR representation like South Africa. They also use constituents. It's not rare that you find a woman will be given a very rural area in Lusaka City that is not reachable. Very conservative people who don't, you know, conservative people who don't want to listen to a woman. And the woman is given to say, go and campaign in that area. There's not even a man supporting that woman. Woman is better to say. So, it happens in other countries. So, people who do those election observation missions from gender perspective, when you do the pre-election visit,
you identify those issues, you document them, you come and report them if they are that. That next time we have elections, country number so and so, or general across the public, women must not be given deep rural areas, areas that are very difficult to work. And then given also, they don't have budget. In South Africa, if we are really fortunate, you appreciate how fortunate we are when we are not here. There's not even a budget. We are given that constituency. China, the constituency doesn't want to listen to women. You use the taxi, getting 5 taxis before you reach your constituents. And by the time you don't have vehicles, other supported by women, other rich people from all their resources to get there. You leave on Sunday when women share the story. You arrive on a Thursday. By the time you arrive on a Thursday, you don't find people. Other people are prepared, men are in the graveyard to dig for the funeral taking place on Saturday. Women are at the women's manyano or preparing for some ritual. You don't have anyone to talk to. So these are the things. And if RWCC is sensitive enough, is good at in a mission, election observation mission, that's what it's supposed to look at. What the chairperson reports from gender perspective. Support countries with no MPWC helps the latter to set such structures. President Zambia, for a long time, he was struggling to have women caucus, but it has one, and we hope now that it has one. It's got clear terms of reference. In Malawi, it has got one, and Malawi is not an easy country to go, but it has got a very strong chairperson. As a result, sometimes I get one agency. I wonder if she's going to last. You know, someone who's very strong, full of energy, say this person must last because this country needs someone like him. Malawi, their child is like child and preaching. He should be very right. It's not something that we frown upon. It's supposed to work. It is a source of hope to young budding feminist politicians. Even who are members here, when I talk of politicians, party politicians, and politicians who are there out there, people who are interested to follow politics, and those at the university. Working in an integrated manner with regional gender machinery. In the region, we have started gender units. We hope that the RWCC works hand to hand within hand with gender units. Study PF Standing Committee on Gender, excuse me, my spelling. Women's Advancement and Development and Youth Development. That's the committee I was talking about, the Girl Wife. That's the RWCC does not contribute the Girl Wife. They are supposed to wear the hand in hand. And then I presented the soldier this program to the members of the RWCC. Fortunately, they bought into it. And I said, you know, for the coming year, though I knew I was a big ambition, how to work as a study, if we don't have funds, can we contribute? And thereafter, you've got to go out and ask for funding. So I found a program that has been online for almost 18 months, so I started from scratch. But I decided to look at the resolution of the previous meeting. Telling some of the resolution of the RWCC of the 24th Plenary Assembly Session, which was held on the 20th of October 2018 in Arusha, Tanzania, into closure. Sometimes you take resolutions, right? And you find that it's just a resolution. Nothing is being done. So we said, let's look at this. The resolution 157, the 50-50 representation of women as members of parliament, is realized by 2015. We need to support countries that are about to achieve this, and a strategy for those lagging behind. South Africa was one of them. But it's clear that we won't achieve this. Our next election, that is 2019. Resolution 4 and 240, capacity building of women parliamentarians to strengthen their law-making and oversight skills from gender perspective. Because we can be able to input into laws and also play the oversight. I'm thinking of it as when you do your standing committee, are you able to look at the laws that have been, the bills that have been led in front of us with the gender perspective and be able to interrogate
for women. How is it going to behave with women when we do our oversight? We do oversight from gender perspective. Resolution 3. Suppose member states were in traveling to establish and TWC. Like Mauritius doesn't have that, and I don't think it will have it anytime soon because you know, the women in that parliament don't feel it. Botswana doesn't have that. We might be able to influence after this election. The Revolution 10, explore new avenues, areas of abuse of rights of people, specifically women and girls, which have not been taken before, e.g. human trafficking, especially in the context of the black minus 300 girls abducted by Boko Haram. I shared the statement prepared by the chairperson on the Boko Haram. Are we still together? We have this that we have proposed. We target the women's activities, developing a vision strategy and an action plan for the body, meaning that we need to conduct an evaluative strategy plan as RWP. Evaluative, look at our strengths and weaknesses. What have we done from 2008 to date? Have we been able to sustain any of what we've done? How many multi-party women's caucuses do we set up? What are they doing? And also, look forward, because the language now in the center of gender is the post-2015 poverty and gender agenda. How do we respond to that? Agree on what you and with when there have been regression in gender case, my manager in international relations with cross with me mentioned in my country, each year South Africa declined from 42.3 to plus minus 40 during the last elections. Am I correct? Mr. Somkata said I must not mention the deadline of my country, but I've decided to include it here because we're going to talk, we're talking together. That must be a concern for the multi-party women caucus of South Africa. During the last general issues, each of Malawian former presidents, the only woman president in this region, reflect and strategize on these losses. It's something that we discussed in the committee, though people were not comfortable to discuss it as RWTV. But for some of us, it is a concern. She was the only president. We don't say she was victimized or she did anything bad, but we need to look at it. What happens when women are put in position of leadership? Did she get enough support? Where did she go wrong? And us as other women, where did we go wrong? I know the chairperson of the RWTC, I included it in her speech. She said it's still a hot potato. But I felt when I come here, it's something that we need to look at. I bet you our president is saying several times that the country is ready for a woman president. The TV. What lessons can we draw from Mana? We put women in, and then we fold our answers who are waiting for this woman to face, or do they exclude us as other women, grassroots women? What happened? An area of interest. And another thing that is coming up, which is very good, is a possible partnership between RWTC and UN women. I said the regional women's parliamentary caucus looks difficult to respond, but what I've discovered, the moment you mention it to Fadas, Fadas is so keen to you because they're talking about 14 critical countries of the target region, women that are already organized. So UN women approached us with a list and then said, can you make input in this list? We listed this input. And then they said, we want to work with you. Meaning that they are going to have a project with us on the post 2015 gender agenda, which might have a spin-off to the country because we don't operate from there. We operate from with the country. The areas, are we interested in areas? It's so faint in mind.
The UN Women will focus on Impact 1. They have what they call Impact 1. Women lead and participate in decision-making at all levels, which means for me, when I interpreted and I made my input, beyond the number, we have to have I gave him my presentation on a record. I gave him the presentation. For honorable, she can't do that. Let me see. Thank you. I'm calling you. I want to go back. I'm sure we are able to.
When I was working with one country, it was the comfort zone.
there is the reality. There are countries with slavery. There are countries, and I still believe the problem lies with our political parties, people. Let's take penetration in the political parties. And as PF, we meet with political parties during this listing process. You meet with the chief whip. At times you even say, okay, let me go to the electoral commission and meet all the political parties, the key people to meet. I don't think it's easy. I have come in with their stereotypes, especially if you are a woman from South Africa. You have to bring in South African thing, although it's not there in many ways, but you can feel it, that's what it means. And then impact too. So I teach people that one, and I think that they like it. What happens after 50-50? Which means also we need to have, though I don't like it, when we want to promote women, the first thing is that, let's train them. We've been trained so much. You train someone until someone passes and go to the next class, right? When are we going to the next class? Let's make women ready. Yeah, they're not ready. These are the excuses. And then the next one, women, especially the poorest and most excluded, are economically empowered and benefit from development. That's another impact. And then how we teach people for that one. This one says, what does it say to us as members, the legislators? Women are economically empowered, specifically the poorest women from the rural areas. Immediately talk to our law ministry. If the standing committee on economic development is there, we should be able to look at what laws do they have in place, what policies, are they friendly to women? Are women able, I mean poor women, when I say poor women with nothing. Hence, I always say, you can't talk of gender without talking about class and race. Because we're different at the end of the day. I know some people will say, this does not want any class. It's got nothing to do with race. But in our background, especially people from South Africa, someone from Zambia will say, we don't know anything about race. Meaning they have been liberated for a long time. But these three truly are interlinked. So what is the challenge? Making laws that are responsible to women's practical gendering and women's strategic gendering. Because economic empowerment also talks about creation of jobs. Jobs that are there, you prioritize women. Don't threaten women when you advertise. We need a dynamic woman who has traveled internationally and produced so many accredited jobs. Immediately you feel that, oh, this is not mine. I'm not dynamic. You get what I mean? That address does not appeal to. And yet if you get that job, which means you are economically empowered, you'll have a certain salary every month for so many years. But if the address discourages you, if you apply, no. When that's an oversight on various standing committees from gender perspective, do we have a framework for that? Now I'm asking, I know South African Parliament has got an oversight model. Am I correct? Internally and externally. Working with the Parliament in 2009, it was still Peter later then. Before she became a deputy president. We presented a gender mainstream model, which slide she was about to implement. And we said that the oversight model, especially when you go out to the community, it should be gender friendly. Gender friendly in the sense that what time you call those meetings? If you take an oversight meeting in people, right? To call them on Thursday, early in the morning when women have gone to fetch water or women have gone to umanyano, and how friendly the codex is. Because you come across men who are used to meeting. Because what the language says, they don't find the Upra Bani is used to go to this meeting. Even when he comes to that, and it has been alluded to. And the women just get the same. They even speak English. I want to participate. This meeting is not mine, isn't it? Are you okay with that? Or when you feel that hey, women are not participating, you're able to sense it and start to talk with them on the side. How will you feel about that? Other women are stressed because their husband might not like Ngofadi and Akima. You are just the undignified woman who talks in front of everyone. And yet, of course, your issues, but you are scared to echo, to voice them out. In the tree, women and girls live a life of free from violence, which also leads us to sharpen our lawmaking skills and oversight skills from women's practical and strategic gender needs. So, that's because for many laws, like your domestic violence and special offenses and child protection, and there are so many laws. But the problem is that we have is the implementation. What are we doing as parliamentarians? Specifically, the manifesting human focus. When we discuss them, you will go to your committee on justice, on safety. Are we able to take the information that we have and present in those committees? And also the information that you get from your constituents or from your home, come and share it with the committee. Even supposed to reform in five, sorry, honorable members, government and national planning fully reflect accountability for gender equality, commitment, and priority. A gender-sensitive government, where and what are women are doing? That question, take it beyond the numbers again. Your budget, do they talk to women issues? It includes many things, representation, affirmative action, is it working? I know some people will say it must expire. Are we ready to make it expire? 20 years, we should be able to interrogate those questions. Have we done enough? So government from the presidency should be gender sensitive. It's supposed to be indexed, a comprehensive and a dynamic set of global norms, political and standards on gender equality and women's empowerment is in place and is applied through actions by government and other stakeholders at all levels. Commitment to boost 2015, poverty and gender agenda. I think that one, how we pitch the issue, is that the parliament and the countries, we are not in an island, we are privileged by the international continental, regional, treaties, conventions that we have signed, protocols, yes? What are we doing about it? Our practices show that we respond to what we have said. Or because we are going to New York in March next year, we are quickly running so that we have a report. And for 5 years, we are doing nothing. Are we together? So, we said by end of the meeting, we look at all these and we said first thing that we need to prioritize is the strategy plan done from gender perspective and also the strategy beyond 50. I mean, after this year, go to all the countries. And what next? If we reach 50, are we ready for this? Which means after this year, if we have this act together, the countries are supposed to be working hand in hand with the other ministry. Chapter 6.
Thank you, Madam Nomisha. You know, actually, I am very excited when I listen to your input on everything that you have spoken about. The program, regional women's parliamentary caucus, their resolutions, and lastly, the objectives. You know, it referred me to our rules. People seem not to understand, you know, what this committee is supposed to be and discussing important the functions of the rules
say functions and powers. Because goes all the way, what you have just mentioned. You see, if we had all the women here today, most of the women that we needed, them to be here, it's addressing what you are saying just now, that women are not deployed to some committees that seem to be very important in economic empowerment. Usually it's men who are deployed there, and how do we penetrate? We must use this platform. Hence, it is very important for the members who are in those committees to be able to talk about this and bring us also the report on the legislation that led the alliance with. I hope our members are listening. Thank you very much, Nikita, on this item. Because of the time that we had waited in the morning and allowed the presenter to go on until this time. And I wanted to ask him, I think we're supposed to be having tea somewhere outside. I don't know whether it's there. Instead of us going questions, I wanted to say, maybe let's pause and have tea and then come back to questions and discuss. So that we give Nokita to prepare for the other items. We are going to the gender barometer, but I think we are going to have a long discussion on this. Because I could see the members were approaching each and everything that they are saying. And I know it addresses the concern that always arise from other members. So I will be going to tea and then come back. Will take about 6 minutes. Can you continue? Okay, they were not mine. They didn't get enough bad in the US. I am just looking at it. Can you continue, Honorable Members? And we will be taking questions of clarity, and then we go into discussion. I hope we'll be able to do that.
I don't know that I can't comment or ask questions on this exciting topic that I love. But there is no government situation. I think you raised this up in saying that in the last 6 years, is it the right time to evaluate or even talk about it? Maybe we can evaluate, but I think the point that we're missing in the last 20 years is that we have isolated the issue of race and sex and class, which these three issues in South Africa, when development came into South Africa, they were bonded together. So if you isolate them, that's when you fail. So now we have isolated them, and we started identifying that the women are locked up in poverty. But that poverty was put together by the three issues clubbed together. So if you want to liberate women in South Africa, you have to bond them together so that you liberate them all in one. Why do I say that? Is that even the woman who sits in the rural area, that woman being called a white woman, madam, it's a reality. Even in urban areas, domestic workers still call their bosses, their aunts, a madam. So the issue of class and the issue of sexual oppression have been clubbed together. If you liberate women, that woman is called a madam.
must be seen to be liberating the same woman whom that woman called Emelene. So if we put them there together, then women will understand that it is not a, it's not an individual thing. It's about liberating a group of women that, that has to go out of bondage. You see? So that is why parties see it as an ANC issue to liberate women. They don't see it as a an issue that affects all women. So if we separate the oppression of women so that people understand that the oppression in South Africa, it was just different from other oppressions everywhere in the world. So if people take each country in terms of its own originality of oppression, because patriarchy hides in many forms. In South Africa, it has hidden itself in racism and class. In other areas, it has hidden itself in class and oppression of women. So if we separate those things, each country will identify how it has to handle its own issues. So the issue of apartheid cannot be evaluated in isolation of its formation. From wherever it started, where oppression started, it has to be taken from there. Then the issue of female and women concepts, I think we must discuss that. You must also include the issue of gender. Because today, as you say, that there are women who are saying that men are also raped. But men are generally not oppressed. And men are always saying that because of the things that have been men forced into private sector, that have been men forced into government, and everywhere in society, and nobody says anything about women being mentored and all that and all. So I think when we talk about those concepts, we must talk to them in their original perspectives. And the issues that are affecting women that we must legislate. I think legislation empowers us to enforce quotas. And even in Europe, I always want to give this example that in Finland, there's a minister who was made, well, was a finance minister, who insisted that companies that did not put women in board positions as chairpersons, when for years they were struggling to get these women into boards, and companies claiming that there are no women qualified to go into those boards, he had to put a legislation that forces companies to pay a certain amount if they don't put those women into boards. And that's only when it adds to their pockets. So even in South Africa, if we have to do that, to put those legislation and ensure that whoever does not abide by the legislation must be punished, then that's the only way we can get women to take those positions. And then the women presidency issue, I think we should not be discouraged that the Malawian president was removed from power by the circumstances there. I don't understand the circumstances in Malawi, but in South Africa I do understand the circumstances. There is never a time when a woman can be killed in vain. So any time we can put that woman, we must not fear putting that woman into that position just because some quarters they think that a woman is not able. I don't know which barometer they are using to measure the readiness of any woman. But I know the readiness of men. Men are ready from birth. So women are ready from birth. That's all. So if we can push women and push them in that position, let us just give the support. I think what we're making is the support that is needed, the training, the confidence that she needs. If she has problems and she faces problems, she needs women support groups to be there to anchor her. Because men make many faults, but they always have support groups that anchor them through the processes. So the issue of multi-party taking up the issue of women in other parties, as I've explained in South Africa, the problem is that they think it's an ANC policy and they can't adopt it. And they feel that their women are liberated, and they are lying to themselves that they women are liberated. Women are never liberated. Even in the white government, women were never liberated. In that space of apartheid, women were not liberated in South Africa. Even in Europe, still women are not liberated, they are white. But the problem is that white women want to speak about problems that affect African women. That's the problem. They are telling us what are the issues that oppress them. So as long as they don't identify issues that oppress them,
then they will never see the struggle of liberating women as their struggle, because they see it as an African thing. No, it's African women that must be liberated, and we must speak on behalf of African women as if we are in charity, peace. We can't be charity. All women are oppressed, black and white. That is why you have the CSR. I mean, at the end of the day, you will have cases like those, where you see a white woman be killed, and it's not only CSR, there's that advocate who was pushing for a child pornography, you know? They have problems, but they are hiding the problems. As long as we don't know what are their problems, Indian women, say that, like Indian women, what are the issues that affect Indian women in South Africa? What are the issues that affect colored women in South Africa? All those issues are women issues. Let them raise those issues and come out so that we can help each other, because all of us are affected by patriarchal oppression. And as long as we hide those issues, we will never be able to moralize these other racial groups. And it's the truth. When we develop policies based on one African problem. It can't be done like that. We are diverse communities within South Africa, and what are the issues that affect all these sectors? I mean, all these women in these racial groups. That's what I wanted to raise. And it has to reflect in your report.
Thank you, Chair. I want to agree and disagree with a couple of points that were raised by the previous speaker. I think you're absolutely right. There is abuse, there is oppression in all societies, and there is no way that I, for example, have ever indicated that it is a problem that just belongs to one sector of society. I work in areas which cover, they say, English, Afrikaans, of course, I reach here in the Western Cape, and I encounter it everywhere. So I think perhaps white women, in the case of abuse, are very much more private about it. I have been to places where women are sitting, living in safe houses. Some of those women are the wives of doctors. Some of those women were auditors. They were at various levels of society, but they don't talk about it. It's something that people keep very private because they do feel that it is an embarrassment and it is difficult. And I think patriarchal attitudes, especially within the Afrikaans community, are very much stronger than they might be in the English society. But it depends very much on the family. And this is a part of the evolution of society. Some people have been more advanced from a long time ago. So definitely within racial groups and with religious groups, there's a tremendous problem. I have great opposition to my own son-in-law, who's got a very different attitude because he comes from a different religious group of mine. So I don't think we can ever really generalize. We have got safe houses, we've got the what used to be called trauma centers and now victim-friendly centers. We've got them all over, but not nearly enough, as I've said so often in society. So I think while many women, white women, for example, had the advantage of education, which was denied to other people. So from that point of view, they've been able to advance more quickly and perhaps stand up for themselves and never keep quiet. I've never stood back for any man, ever, from a little girl. But that came from our family, because we were all treated the same. So I think, but you are right, there's more than in one area. I work a lot in a coloured, predominantly coloured area, and there women don't mind talking about it because it is so pervasive. So you've got the silence on one side, and this is also oppression, the silence of oppression that people don't want to speak. And what we're coming out and saying is, speak about it, share it, let us know. Because if we know what is happening, then we can work with it, we can talk about it, and in areas like churches as well. So you've had your economic freedom sooner, you've had your education, and that equips you to fight back. But there are many women, and it depends on different religious groups too. They will say, the man is the head of the household. I mean, there's some church groups, my own neighbor, I had a discussion with her once, because I told her I was going to be talking in the church on Mother's Day. And she looked at me and she said, you're a woman. You can't speak and stand in the pulpit. Now that's her particular sect of religion, it's not mine. But I agree with you wholeheartedly, we all need to stand up together and say behind the facade, behind those closed doors, we are all suffering in different ways. And some of us who are strong and who've got the courage to speak up need to go out there and help everybody. Because it's the way you bring up your family that makes the difference. And this is how they talk to mothers. Don't make a difference with your sons. Don't make them think they are special, they can't do housework, they can't wash dishes. We must all work together as a family for our society and this country to go together. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Robinson. Honourable Mabi.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. And Mr. Chuka for the presentation as well. It was very empowering and educative as well. And one lesson, it also gives me an opportunity to reflect as a young woman who comes from the rural area, clearly disadvantaged, that the struggle for women is not over. It still continues, and there were those of us who have had an opportunity to be here at this level to represent other women. We still have a long way to go, but we cannot do it if we are not united. We cannot do it if we do not say solidarity to one another. I'm saying solidarity to one another because of your interpretation of what is expected of the women's caucus, multi-party women's caucus. That it should cut across party politics, it should cut across color, it should be a forum where women come together and in particular for support for one another. The worship, Honorable Chair, comes during the time when South African courts are struggling to not litigate. What is this? When there's a case in a South African court that I don't want to talk about because the matter is with the CDK, I just to mention that there's a serious domestic violence issue, right? That is before the court. I'm saying that because I want to support that Honorable Chair said, you know, to see that people are very silent about it, you know. In South Africa, domestic violence, it is seen as a black issue, and then other issues are not going to work, which is not true. The workshop, Honorable Chair, it comes at a time when we have just witnessed an unfortunate debate in the National Assembly where a Speaker of Parliament was called not to be to resign, to take leave from her position. We don't know what motivated that, but by name, you know, and from other political parties. And in political parties where women are also present, whether that issue was tabled in their caucus, what did other women say about it? You know, were they able to were they given an opportunity to reflect? And also, were they able to bring the gender sensitivity issue in their caucus? I'm just reflecting, you know, that the workshop comes at a very critical time when we've witnessed that unfortunate situation. The workshop also gave me an opportunity as a young woman to say that we need to support and treat one another. But as we grow, it should not only be about ourselves and what we have, protecting our surroundings, but we need to extend that as well, you know, teaching a girl child, being a motivator, being a role model for others.
I also reflected on the priorities on gender, the impact as she was presenting. The moving representation to participation, she spoke about strategic deployment versus capacity. You know, women in most cases are disadvantaged because of this weight caused capacity. As to men who are in strategic positions or leadership positions, they have that capacity. I mean, we can witness a number of issues, a number of institutions where men are leaders and they do not have capacity. Instead, you may find that within the group, there's a very powerful woman there, but she's been suppressed. So we need to fight for that as women politicians. We do have the capacity to do that. She spoke about a very interesting issue that will then prepare us for the future. What happens after 50-50? We say 50-50, then what? I think we need to also start to motivate for the retaining of the existing skills, retainment of the existing skills. So let's do that. Let's identify skills and be able to retain the skills where we think that we have developed women. She spoke about empowerment of women, the economic empowerment, which is a buzzword of lately in South Africa. The issue there is that as women MPs, are we able to move or support the budgets that are gender sensitive, you know, that are biased towards women's development. For an example, in housing, do we have women in our committees who are able to say, no, contractors, let's see how many contractors have you empowered. Out of those contractors, how many women are there? It doesn't matter. You know, sometimes we feel sorry about talking about women issues. And if they know that you are a gender activist every time you ask about women issues, this thing of labeling you. She's going to talk about women. Let it be so. We can shy away from that. It's our responsibility. That's why we are here. Those women voted for us to come and represent them here. You spoke about application, that the applications might be intimidating in their nature. I want to take it further to say that women who are capable to occupy those positions, they also do not have the courage or the capacity to negotiate for better salaries. But men do that. If they say, at this level, we want a person who can do this and that, a man can go to an interview and say, yes, I can give you this and that, based on my experience, based on my skills, and what I will offer to the institution. I think the package that you are giving to me, it is insufficient. I want to negotiate for more. So women do not encourage to do that. We need to also try and highlight that they've got a right to also negotiate for better packages. Public participation is about accessibility. I think, as she correctly said it, the use of language, you know, sometimes even the manner that you are at, it tends to move people away from you. Are you dressed or addressing the people in a manner that will make them feel as you are? Or as a person who be able to represent them, you know, do they feel connected to you, the voice, even a phone? Because female, not just in particular positions, we tend to be, I don't know, we change our attitude and maybe the kind of environment we find ourselves in. Or you end up in both, you know, when you talk, when you come, other women must see you. No, they when comes in, she's not going to be friends as well as a woman, as a mother. You understand? That's why you will find she's a leader. But I'm saying, you know, public participation, women must feel that mother is coming, you know. When mother comes there, people must feel that they must come to Masori and talk to Masori. No worry, all of a sudden then the teacher there, you want to address it, them and yeah, your whole thing. they're not even approach you. Maybe even ourselves, so now we need to do introspection. Or are we at that level of being able to affect people and make people feel that they are their equals? The issue of violence. The laws are there. We want to live in a free. We want to live every life that is free from. We want to live a life that is free from violence. That is what I'm going to say around violence. The national laws are there. Are we doing enough? What is it that we're not doing that really cannot stop this violence? You know, every day we get to know of stories that are happening across all races. Hysteria has been a very powerful tool to use that. But I think also when harsh sentences have been granted, that needs to be communicated, that people should know that in such a case, this is what the judiciary has advocated. This is how the judiciary has advocated on it. So that in other cases where we feel that justice was not done, but they should know that it cannot be all the time that justice is not done. Honorable Chair, I will pause there. Thank you very much. No, I think I will pause. Yes. I apologize, Chair.
Yes. Okay. This is your turn.
Thank you, Jefferson. I would like to welcome the presentation. It was really very interesting, and it was at the level where everyone of us could really enjoy and understand.
Firstly, the Honourable has covered a lot of issues. I'm not going to labour those. I'm going to be talking on other issues, not very many at all. The first issue is the issue of the NCOP that you raised at the beginning of the meeting as to the representation of women in citizenship is really not speaking. 18% is not even a quarter of the relationships that are held by women. It's an issue that needs to raise really sharply. Let alone the committees that you alluded to, economic development, so committees, international relations, rural development, let alone that. The mere fact that 18% is an issue that is really worrying. That's the first issue. The other issue that was raised now in the presentation, I was happy when you clarified the different roles of the multi-party women's caucus and the women's portfolio committee that has got oversight over gender issues in each and every department, resorting in the presidency. I'm happy because it has always created confusion, even at the level of provinces, where members have not been really sure as to what is my role, what is the other committee's role, and afraid to step on other on another's toes and issues like that. I think that information needs to filter down to that level as well as to the level of local government. And then I was worried in the presentation about the backsliding. In the presentation, we were 42, and there was a backsliding to the 40. That's what it said. That is also very worrying. It's an issue that I think is multiple women's caucus need to take up and correct. I think it is our duty as this body to actually correct that come the next parliament, because we want to move forward. We don't want to go backwards, because people, other countries are to up to South Africa with hope that we are making a reasonable progress, and if we backslide, I think that's discouraging quite a bit. And we need to be very vigilant as we approach local government elections, is to ensure that females or women are actually elected into positions of being councillors, into positions of being administrators in different municipalities. It mustn't happen with local government. And then another issue that you raised that I liked it. We don't view this body as just for lobby and advocacy. It's a strong, effective machinery for women's bodies, and we must use the power that have been given by the machinery itself to raise issues that affect us as women. We must not look down upon ourselves. As a result thereof, Samson, much as it is a bad day, let's see the question today, but I think we have made an effort. Seeing that it is a women's issue, some of us are not deposited on the position, but it's so important that at least they can come and support our own things as women. And I think everybody else would have done the same. The other issue, ability to engage women at all levels of the community. Other than that, we did actually just a bit as to say that, hey, Ogushinja, because you are a member of an honorable member of parliament, you now become an animal that you see and people cannot approach. If you are really your husband, even touch you, because you're an MP. You tell them that you're not related to you freely. You know, this is not supposed to be the case. Well, it tells me that some of us become ashamed of the fact that we are women. We are women, and we're proud of it. I don't aspire to be made. Let me be made. I am a woman. And I'm going to behave as such. The only thing is that I know my power. I know my rights. I know what belongs to me. And nobody is going to get that away from me. But I'm a mom. I am a mom. I'm an aggressive mom. I am a wife. I am an MP, a community service worker. And everything that a woman needs to be. I am a church for a human young. Most of us will be, if we buy things, but no. There are various roles that we play as women. And you don't have to change us to be, if you want to be like men. I like that being able to relate to people at various levels. And the empowerment issue. It's not of us that are empowered. And when you come into a situation where you sense as a woman it's not. You know, it's so that means that it's not between us. We don't lift one another up, you know, as women in support, we have an alarm pull it down syndrome. Or when I was the Magumpan, and I'm proud of the NA. I am really proud of the nation of that way they can have it together. The emotion of the confidence of the speaker, independent speaker, and women were very, very good in participating in that debate. And I want to say thank you very much. They made us very proud. Because even when they are looking at the land, since we were one, and you play our role as mothers, and you said them, it comes to here. And no further. It doesn't go further than here. This is the end. And that attitude is not the attitude of being cruel. But it is the attitude of saying, you must wear your place, because I know mine. You also must wear your place. So the way that one was handled, we were in the Ethiopia, and part of it, but we're very happy in the manner in which the dignity of our own speaker was actually defended by other women in the National Assembly. Lastly, the cultural issues, economic empowerment of women. I not to say that you want to be chairpersons of portfolio committees where change is dealt with more than other committees, but the actual economic empowerment of women by developing them business people. And big business, not small business, is the issue that we need to pursue and buy. Go back to some business about the business. Go back to the business. if you educate a woman, you educate a nation, but if you educate a man, it's an individual. So there is a reason why we need to develop women even further along the lines of the business world, especially our children, because they're not employed. They are certificated, they have secure employment, and we need to as women, we need to create space for them to survive in this era. I think, Captain, that was my last point. People hiding like cultural issues and using them to abuse women. Those are the issues that we are not going to acknowledge as women. And lastly, I know that the matter is not UDK, the issue of Pretoria and River Syndrome, which is absolutely, but that's why I would say that when you hear divide out in the communities, that's far, the legacy that far, it is not conclusive alone, has disappointed a lot of women. It really has. If we're honest, we don't know what is forthcoming, but most women have been disappointed by the manner in which this case was made, because it is actually perpetuating abuse. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Zwane, Honorable Majin. Thank you, President. Mine is just a few comments, because I arrived late and I picked up a few things. President, for everything that needs to be achieved, the time frame and the financial situation that is needed, I'd request that the multi-party caucus or forum should focus into requesting more time from Parliament for the multi-party caucus, because if you have to achieve something, you really need to put time. It's good to hear all the beautiful things that are being said, which are good, but if we have not enough time to implement them, we will not succeed. So I'd request that you really look into the amount of time allocated here in Parliament for this multi-party caucus, because if you've got very little time, surely we will fail and we'll be regarded as having failed, and yet we did not have enough time. Number two, budget. If there are no finances to do whatever needs to be done, we will fail not as fast. So I'd request that those two centers, if we can really look into it, because I think the budgets don't really look into the multi-party caucus, same guys with the time that is allocated. So if it seems, and if it's just an ordinary one of those additional caucuses, which are important, and yet this is a very, very critical caucus, which addresses women, so that it can also address the women outside in the outskirts. First, empowering the women in Parliament, and then going out to empower the women in rural areas. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Macheke. I don't know who comes with the Honorable Van Beken. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation, which was very Sismongita, which was very inspiring, though I arrived very late. But I think we should also acknowledge and appreciate what the South African government has made until this far, because before it was not like that. You know, in the 20 years of democracy, at least see more numbers of women, you know, in Parliament, or also in the decision making. So we should also try to assist to take the process forward. You know, I always refer from the Bible. You know, the Bible, it always says that we are all equal before God. And being equal, but as the men, we women, with the very Bible, we are the one who oppress ourselves. And
think those are the things that we really have to unpack and communicate and you know, critique. Okay. You know, I'm just looking at also on this document that you give us on the SGGI and on the role as women caucus, what can we do? You know, I'm looking at the SGGI, you know, those initiatives. That is education, political participation, economy, health, HIV and AIDS. And yes, education is a priority here in South Africa. But did we ask ourselves as women the curriculum? Because in order that we should really emancipate our children, this gender issue, they should be part of the curriculum. Have we done it? We have not. And if, I'm just saying that even oppression, the environment, is it conducive where our children are, where they are getting education? The environment is very hostile. It's hostile. You know, in housing, I've assessed what our NSC for education was, you know, advocating for. He's advocating for, what is it? Good sanitary, health toilet, good toilet for our kids. And abolition areas, which is very repulsive for our children to be educated in those areas. And we are talking about gender. Gender are those small little things that still oppress you. Are we as women, as parliamentarians, really trying to advocate that conducive environment for our children? The curriculum that we implement. We can see even here in parliament the behavior, the social, social behaviors of other members of parliament. You can see the children, how they were exposed in life. The way they talk, you know, and what are they saying as women parliamentarians? So those are the small little things that are very important. Because now the media is taking that kind of behavior to the generation to come. So we must speak with one voice and we must stop that kind of behavior and to advocate proper kind of respect that is needed to that society. Yes, political participation, because we are from diverse political background, but let's ensure that this thing of political participation is done at the grassroots. And it's for people to be able to appropriately intervene on the issues of economy. It's only through education. And health, you know, what Ntatemo Tweli has done in South Africa with this integrated school health. Is that integrated school health? Is it a package? How we as parliamentarians going to make sure that the proper package that will be able to speak to the socio-economy of, you know, of socio-economy of the development of our country. We let things are there in place, but we don't package them properly and we don't communicate them properly to the community. There is a sketch of HIV and AIDS. What are we seeing? You know, I used to have young youth, you know, that I used to talk to them there. You know, they said that, you know, we really want to thank you for empowering us well in the civilian. And I think it's very crucial if young boys and girls, women, I think there is much that we can do. And we should be able to, you know, interact with our children where they are still young. The early childhood development, those are small little critical things. They're critical. we are talking about big things, but if heaven are not going to address this small little thing, it will be almost perpetuating a vicious cycle. So I'm believing that if we go as a multi-party human caucus, let's go and address small little things. Early childhood development, the curriculum, what are we communicating the media? Now the media was looking at this, what is this mobile? I'm sorry, you know, I was just looking at this woman. Tandaza, I'm sorry to kick you out. Tandaza is a very, they portray her as a very wealthy, famous woman. But now the man is angry. Because now he is successful. You know, he keeps on reminding the woman that I'm a man of this house. And you know, the community out there, it's where they believe. So I'm saying that, yes, the legislation is there, but if in order that we want to go forward and even to develop our country, it's all small little things that matter. And women parliamentarians, they must be seen in those ECDs, they must be seen in schools, they must communicate properly about this gender issue. And children, what has happened as women, we are not to focus here, what has happened about our speaker? I think really we must condemn. We must stand together as women here. We must put a particular type of time. And we must not give those six women what they have done is not acceptable. I think this is the message that must come from this multi-woman caucus. And tell them that because it's going to happen again. But if we are not going to tell them, Simon, Julia, that other priest, that letter, guys, I'm telling you, we must step up. We are gentlemen. Those who are coming from other parties, political parties, let them up as one voice and show that we are here. We are not here today, but we need business as women. We want to be respected. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to call upon a Honorable Fan Skalkwit. Now I'm going to Chair's house. I would like you to confine yourself on the topic. I think you are getting outdated. All of you. Most of you and Bangakata leader. I'm not condemning some of the things to concern us as women. But I want you to confine yourself on the topic so that when we write our report, it must be based on what we were discussing, the topic that we had. And don't bring the the two swords from. I need a hand. Can you lower your hand? Yeah, I'm going to recognize you. Can you please don't bring the cleaner here? What's happening there and call out people's names and all this? Because I think we are recording. Thank you. Honorable Skalkwit.
Thank you, Honorable Jefferson. Yeah, it is fantastic. Thank you for the opportunity. I also want to echo what the others said, and I fully agree with the later speakers, including thanking Ms. Nomkita for the presentation that she's given, really. Chairperson, it's
good that you are now caring, because we've been provoked by the previous speakers. But we will try our little best to stick. But really, Jefferson, I think we are so wounded by the past, and that's the reality of a past where it's characterized by high levels of patriarchy. And we should not be apologetic if we are advocating for women's emancipation. However, we are sometimes sidelined and oppressed because of low levels of support by other women. That cooldown syndrome that we are experiencing, even within our communities, within our churches, within our families, all other organizations that we are experiencing it. And we often tend to support men above women. And that's why we are really also appreciating the support that the speaker received from the female comrades in the NEA. And we must acknowledge it. But Honorable Chairperson, I think we should guard against reversing the gains that were made in favor of women over the past decades. And gains that have been hard fought for. And we can't sit here if we look today at how serious our female comrades are taking this forum. And we are indeed not feeling down because of the poor attendance, but indeed we are appreciating those who are in attendance in ensuring that we advance the gains of women made. And the importance of the continuous capacitation of women when they are being advanced to higher positions or deployment of strategic types is very important. And I think we should acknowledge at this forum also the continuous support that should be given to those women after their deployment to their strategic positions. What the presenter also mentioned is the challenges faced by female MPs. And I think that is often neglected. And we are not properly raising all those challenges. And we should acknowledge, Chairperson, that if all those challenges are being raised and they are being addressed, then indeed we are ensuring that families are being built, but we're also ensuring that we have stronger, well-emancipated women who can advocate for other women, but also be strong leaders where they are. And we are being faced with a lot of challenges, including as mothers, as daughters, where we are coming from. And we are not raising all those challenges because relevant platforms are not created. That's why we are happy for this platform. And we would really like to urge other female comrades make use of this platform in order to raise on behalf of other females who can't raise it by themselves, because we know that not a lot of us are making use of the relevant platforms. I think I'll pause here. Thank you, Jefferson.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Van Skalsvik, Honorable Sommer.
Thank you, Chair. Let me confess, I was just tempted by some honorable members of the speak. But having said that, Chair, I would say, when you are appointed in the chair, that why forgive the age? So, but I understand why you needed a person as you are, of my caliber, to chair this committee. I think that's where I want to start. Let me also start from what I'm saying, Chair, so that I can just put honorable members at ease. But nobody was saying, we have a woman, she wants to be the president, wants to be this and this. Who was going to say that? I would. But I'm not kidding that. I'm just saying by the way. Yeah, chair. But honorable member spoke about the school environment and upkeeping infrastructure and all that. I think also it starts in the consciousness. It starts in early childhood. I think we must pay attention to that, rather than deliberate through partner with social welfare department and just inquire where the early childhood support is in terms of educating also if honorable department. But I think this way, because even where our kids are taught, even at this school, at our benches at my age, of course, they are taught, it must then deal with the issue how do they respond to the society and education and the types of education and social area that they choose. It's very important. And I quite agree, the issue of gender also is still a race issue, a background issue, your upbringing issue. I just overheard Honorable Mado was talking with a young lady, I just forgot her name. We were saying that, and she attended a lecture, she was studying something, and she came late at 20 minutes or 10 minutes late, and the lecturer changed her for good. She couldn't finish her study. But the point that I'm driving at, without knowing whether that lecturer was a man or a female, for me that's not the issue, but without also appreciating the reason of her coming, the possibility of her coming late, she might have a child, she might have a sick mother, she must be staying somewhere far away, she's using public transport. And then the issue of upbringing and our history, the race issue and so forth, and the tolerance also, and also trying to say we are building the country here. Number two, Chair, link to that point. Is that probably as this committee, moving forward, as a steering committee, can you say, but I would say we, is to say how we also change the mindset of the letters and the dreams and the heads of faculties that indirectly unaware and aware discourage our kids to study further. The submission of portfolio, the way they address you intellectually when you submit your portfolio, it's painful. But what it says, I was reading the newspaper, Sunday newspaper, talking about that. To say that in terms of race, Africans in particular, blacks in particular, have gone back in terms of them. But also if we understand also the mindset of those heads of university and all that, I want to leave that one, because also like dealing with the societal mindset, which is very critical. The last one, my very last one, Chair. Is the issue of that, how do we pay attention, unfortunately, NCOP also is present today. The will and sisters to say, when we local municipality develop and review their IDPs, that will be nice with the budget. Also, it should solve these issues. Because your transferring schemes and development in terms of your special development, it happened then. What it happened at the national level, but that's what it happened at first instance. Issues of land issues, as you spoke about, and all those things, to say how do they find it expression. And also when we put laws and policies, also how do they can reflect it and be very jealous of dealing with women issues. Thank you for the opportunity, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Lesoma. When our way goes, Honorable Dani.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me start off by appreciating the presentation. It is really an eye-opener and reminds us of the responsibility that we have. I would like to start with the Women's Charter 1964. We are completing 6 years this year. I think that should serve as a base document, especially to check how far have we gone as women and what are the outstanding issues. Fortunately, I was debating, it was part of my debate. One has realized how much we've gained as women, part of that women's challenge that we can ask with as women across political parties. That is one area or which I would want us to revisit. Maybe we have to review. Then check it from there. But on the issue of their comments are correct to say we should start from ECD, but I want to go further. Because for me,
families, learning institutions, and churches, those are the most critical institutions that prepare a child for the outside world, socialization. How far have we gone in teaching our own women how to raise their children in such a way that even if when we are not there, because we won't be there all the time to fight for them, they are able to stand on their own and fight for their rights as women? The issue of socialization is very much critical. Even before birth, you know, when I'm pregnant and I look beautiful, I said, ah, she's going to give birth to a girl child, she looks so nice. You know, you're shortening that child. If it is a boy, oh, she's ugly, she's going to get a boy, a very strong boy. Those are the things, small things, small as they are, even before birth, you socialize the child. When they're born, the color that we're using, pink is soft, blue is strong. They sound small, but they're serious in terms of upbringing of the child. It means that even before we go to school, we take them to the ECD, as women, we've got a role to play in bringing up our children. The toys that we buy for them, they mean a lot, because we are preparing them for the outside world. It goes to school, it goes to university. It means that we must play a major role, but out of this or our chair, I would have loved, I don't know whether it's possible, when come up with a strategy, I would have loved to us to come up with tangible things that we want to achieve. What is it that we want to put in education? What do we want the Minister of Education to do in the curriculum? Specific things. And what programs do we want to come up with for women? My committee is saying we don't want committee to chair them. We do want them. We do want them because if I'm chairing a committee that deals with mining, if I'm chairing a committee that deals with mining, the first question I would have when I'm meeting with the minister, how many women are going to benefit? Do not find a man asking that question from a minister because they don't care. No, not that they care. It's not part of their responsibility. If I'm a chairperson of that committee, I will ask how many women are going to benefit. By so doing, we are influencing that department to come up with a program that will empower women. So we were just talking with her here that in the NCOP, only 3 female are chairing committees. Out of 11 committees, we are only 6 chairing. And those committees that we are chairing, we did not know till the time, we only know now as you are presenting, a social committee. I'm sharing social services, sharing education and culture. I can't remember the other committees, but all these other important committees are chaired by men. But we are majority. Starting from the lead process when we go to initiative, we are the majority. That's one thing that must also deal with, because most of the time we prefer men for position than women. Only is when they talk about ministers or they talk about MECs or they talk about mayors, the first person that comes to mind is a man, by women. What do we do with those things? Because we have control over that, we are the women. We have control over those things. Those are some of the quick wins that we can do. In fact, the other thing that is happening is that even if we can get a 50-50, but when it comes to replacements, when all of us are not cautious, more cautious about 50-50, they take out the women and replace it with the men. You only realize later how much we have lost as women. The issue of the women present, we're only talking about that. We are saying we do want female president, but what are we doing? What I'm doing? Waited during the last election until all the processes were done. Isn't it as possible to start a political party? When political parties were done with their process, who's going to be the president, who's going to be the deputy president, then we can say what the president, human president. Where were we when the processes were held? Meaning that we have to start earlier and say we want to be the president. We may not talk about the name, but we start processes. Make sure that we position ourselves in such a way that
when those processes of lining up people for big positions, they are ready as well. Those will be my input, but I feel that maybe it must not be too hard on us. If you look at the Women's Charter, you can see how much we have gained out of that as well.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Shannon. I'm aware that one of the people has got your hand, and I just want to comment before I allow you to speak. You know, I am very, very surprised that we have women with such vast knowledge here of the issues that they want to put forward. In my all the years that I've been in Parliament, by the way, the recognition of this committee was done by myself, and the person who was the chair has been then, this committee was not recognized by Parliament, and it was not funded. And it was ourselves who really undermined the committee. Now today I'm getting people with such big ideas. I'm sure I will put that in because you hear the people who are here today before of the new coming because they are coming from first seven. But my snag is when they get to this committee, they are afraid to speak. We should have also spoken about assertiveness. You know, that's what I wanted to pass over. I don't know what can be said.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm a social day house thriller to echo what you said about the quality of the input. I've also been around for a long time, and it's wonderful to see younger people coming into Parliament who have the education, the ideas, and are coming forward so strongly. I think this is wonderful. And I particularly associate myself and my colleagues here on the left with what you said about education and socialization. And then also to come to a colleague over there who mentioned that we need more budget, we need more time. I agree with you. And I want to come from the town, as my story did, where this was not a recognized portfolio, and it was only last year, for the first time, that we got secretaries and that there was budget. So yes, we're still limited to this, you know, lunchtime slot just because of the nature of the programs, you know, and it's difficult. But I was there with Ramajive talking and saying we need time. We need to be able to echo and to be able to say what needs to be said. Because so often the things aren't said because women might not have the courage to say it. But I'm so excited that this is no longer the case. Not in committees or anywhere. We must say what we think because you're quite right. We are representing people out there. And this is one of my greatest joys as a Member of Parliament. When I work in the constituencies, and particularly the poor constituencies, that I'm the voice of those people who haven't been able to speak for themselves. And I will sit there, whether it is in a shack or in a house or whatever, I'll write the things down and take the battle forward, because we are our representatives. And we always remember, this is something I'm very particular about, we are the servants of the people. We don't set ourselves, or we shouldn't set ourselves up to be more important and more grand. That's not what parliamentarians are there for. We are here to speak and to echo the voices and the views of those people who haven't all had the advantages that we've had. So we have made progress. But there are still problems, and there are still contradictions. And we've got a long way to go for the people. You're very often always talking about the rural people. Where did I grow up? I'm still there. Kumani, daily prayer, places like that. That's where my family came from. That's where I learned to speak because that's not as good as it is now anymore. But you know what struck me? When I was a little girl of 5 years old, I had to go to school. When I went to school, there wasn't a single playmate around that I knew.
And I said to my mother, but mommy, where's Nosha? Where's Nosha? Why are they not at my school? And that's when I became aware of the fact that there were differences. And for me, in a home which grew up with an Afrikaans mother, an English father, and a Xhosa community, my sister's first language was Xhosa. She had to learn English when she went to school. I like to think that I have some insight into what was suffered by other people. So I also feel that we work together as women and that we don't generalize and make statements that we think all right about the other people. So unless you've been in that person's shoes, you don't really know. So I really do appreciate, and what you said too, curriculum, education, so important. I was a teacher. But I agree with you, it's what happens in the home. How the mother and the grandmother, the aunties and uncles, and also fathers, have to be encouraged to bring about this caring and to say we must have respect one for another. The way you treat your mother is the way you're going to treat your wife. And if you've got that example of a strong family life, even if your family is broken and you don't have a husband or whatever, if you can just bring this love across. A couple of you have mentioned religion. And I just want to say, I think all religions talk about love. If we can just try and love one another more, then there will be a better relationship. Yes, there will be conflict. We don't always agree with one another. But I think this respect and understanding is what we can do. And if this Maori Party Women's Congress can succeed where we didn't in the past, because we've now got more people and we've got more support, I'm sure we can achieve it. And Mama Tori, if I can just say thank you to you also about saying not bringing in the political aspect, because I was also uncomfortable about this. And I think I must just tell you from the other point of view, because we need to know what the other point of view. This was not something aimed at a woman. It was the position of the speaker. And the feeling of the other opposition parties was that she was not being even-handed. I don't want to go into it all, because nothing to do with being a woman. It's the fact that equal opportunities, also equal discipline, let everybody be disciplined, not just some. And you know, we had a great respect for the previous speaker as well, Speaker Sisulu. He happened to be a man, but he was even-handed. And I think that's all we're saying. But I think as far as politics is concerned, let's leave it there. Let's all be mamas and gogos and makulas and sisters and brothers and say, we must take this nation forward. Because it's in our hands and it's a tremendous responsibility we have. We're very privileged to be able to be young and old. In God's name.
See, I want to clear the air. You see, what makes it so conspicuous is that women who are in those political parties never made the discussion. They were led by men. That's where the concept was. And it was so obvious. Then, to all women, it becomes a gender. You see, that is how now it lands up the thing. I was trying to say, okay, let us not, because we can mention a lot of things, you know, and I said, let us not bring the plenary here, but the fact is, women are being undermined when they hold very important positions. Either they are not suitable to do that, they don't have the capacity and all that and all that. It will happen to anyone who is a woman, black or white or colored or any. We can quote a lot of incidents and places and positions where women are being undermined. I think you will understand where the other people come from. Yeah. And please. Every time I can hear honorable words that you when you talk about other parties, you feel as if, no, it mustn't be Amas. I can relate a story to you about myself. I was brought up by a Scottish people, Mr. Galloway and Mrs. Galloway in Stutterheim, and King William Town. I was born in Shilanda.
They used to take me to school, they used to pay my school fees, they treated me like their daughter. So I've got a similar upbringing like yours. So that doesn't make a difference to me. I know what transpired at that time. Yes. Honorable, so.
Yeah, Chair, thank you very much. I think I'm the only one who didn't even appreciate Madam Chita for the presentation. Maybe because I was excited that almost the things that she said, I love them more than anything else. But Chair, I think I want to agree that, you know, the misconception in South Africa that we normally say we live in an equal society today. But where do we come from? Because our socialization, it's not a personal thing. You shouldn't think that I'm attacking white people or Indian people or what. But always the case that white women want to speak about my oppression. I don't know their oppression. It's a fact. Everywhere in the world, white women want to speak about my oppression. What is their oppression? I don't know. I've been a woman activist all my life. Even when I was teenager, my mother can tell you I've been reacting against the roles of females within my own household. So, and I'm still saying, I'm a gender activist, and I'm still prepared to fight for other races. If they can tell me what are their issues, I will help them to fight against them. Because patriarchy is something that is very subtle. You have to find it as an activist. It's not here to all of us. That is why you find women oppressing other women, because they think it's normal. And we shouldn't blame them, you see. We're not blaming them, but we want to educate each other. Those that are enlightened must educate. Same applies to racism. Those who don't understand racism, they'll never see it racism. Today, when you say a white person is racist against me, they think you are a racist. When you talk about affirmative action, people think that you are doing racism in the bed. How do you put people on an equilibrium level? Because you know that the African woman was the most oppressed in our society. How do you bring that woman to the level of a white woman? We give them the same opportunity. It's not the same opportunity. When you bring a black woman and to that level of a white woman, even if they can go to the same school, they are not equal. Because that white woman, the circumstances that she comes from are conducive and viable. And that black woman, her conditions are not viable, they are not conducive. That is why when she's interviewed, she can't even negotiate an income that is conducive. She doesn't even have a clue what is her value in that market at that point in time. So our basis of putting people at an equilibrium, it won't take us 20 years. It won't take us 300 years. It must be an effort of those that are oppressed and those that are not oppressed to make an effort. Today, people are not making an effort to put people on the same equilibrium. We're struggling to get there. And you still have to talk about generational poverty. And that generational poverty is not going to go away because there's a legislation that is in place. It is a mindset that is the problem. My neighbor, where I stay in a suburb, has educated his kids. He's from Free State. He has educated his kids that I am a helper. When his kids approach me to greet me, he grabs them. Why? Because as a racist, that man is a racist. And I always say that he's a racist because of the action. I'm willing to reconcile because I want to move forward. Not that I must forget where I come from. So, same applies to women. That is why the issue of class, race, and gender, they are intertwined in South Africa. You can't remove it. So you take a person to an economic sphere and say this person must participate. We're not equal. And we won't be equal during this generation or during the next generation and during the next generation. It's just going to be a rhetoric that we're talking about, but it's not equality. So I want to talk about infrastructure in Nomkita. The infrastructure that we have even in Parliament is not a conducive infrastructure for women. You start with your driveway. One of the examples was complaining, in Johannesburg you can't walk on the pavement. because the man who did the infrastructure only thought about men's shoes that are only plain. And women's shoes are not plain. It's like driving a car. The gears of the car are not women's things. They are still masculine. Incorrect. You go to a toilet. A toilet is still a masculine structure. Every time a woman sits on the toilet, there's a problem. So it's worse than go to a man's toilet. So the issue of all those infrastructure that is there, it is a problem. And these are small little things that we never even talk about. Unfortunately, when we come into the state of parliament, we talk about political affiliation and all that. And the conservative area, I think the conservative areas that you have said about that women are employed in those conservative areas. Most instances in South Africa, you see women culture have always been undermined. When in our communities, it is women councillors that are undermined, their houses are being banned because it is a woman who has taken up that position. And these are areas where our men folk, if they want us to be equal to them, they must go and support us. Talk to communities, educate communities, but our men folk leave the whole thing of gender equality to us as women to put forward and all that. And unfortunately, member man, the issue of talking, unfortunately, some of us are very aggressive and people think that we are very aggressive. That's how we talk. And unfortunately that most of the time people come to you even if you talk very aggressively. But because men are always threatened of you, so you shouldn't forget that naturally you speak like that. You should speak out and people must get used to you being loud, because even African people are loud. In culturally, we are loud people. And unfortunately, loudness is associated with aggressiveness. So it's misconceptions. People come with stereotypes, you know, judging you out, you know, not even knowing you, because you are loud and they think that you are arrogant. And unfortunately, because we don't understand each other's culture and language, other people misinterpret you. I mean, there was a member who even said that he won. Just because it's an idiom of another language, people don't understand it and they vulgarize our languages. So we need to understand even other people's languages, other people's stereotypes, myths, and all these things, norms and values. We don't understand each other. And we misunderstand. By misunderstanding, that's when people find that they misinterpret what the person wanted to convey and the message forward. So all those things, because we are a diverse community, we are a diverse cultural place in South Africa, most people don't understand exactly what we want to convey forward. So those misconceptions we must clarify all the time. We'll be patient with each other. I think the issue of respect, but the respect can be there when people don't understand your language. You know, start with language. Culture, it's language. Once you understand the person's language, it's then that you understand the cultural behavior of different individuals. So, Madam Chair, I want to stop there and just say we really appreciate the input that we've given, that it's going to help the committee to manage some of the things that have been expressed even by colleagues here, that those things are going to input them. Unfortunately, some of us are in both committees, in the multi-party and also in the women's portfolio. So we are looking forward to working with some of the issues that have been raised today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Petro. Unfortunately or unfortunately, I know you have your I know where you come. And I know that too. So it doesn't affect. I know where to make it and say it's too much now. So, but it is always excellent. I just wanted to say, Mabe, I have taken note of that. You see, Honorable Robertson and Madamini and all the other people on the left mustn't be like I'm looking to one side. If we want to progress from where we are, at some stage I was looking at our system, electoral system,
and looking at the 650 thing compared to the African states. And I was quite excited. 2007 plus, somewhere it was like it is stagnant now. We are, you know, we are not moving. If you want to do that, I think we should speak out. Now the problem that has, people are afraid to speak out because of the material. And I think we must speak about it so that people must know that we are aware. You see, I don't think, Madam, I mean, where you come from, as you were saying, you are fired to be watched. You came here and you were an activist because you saw it necessary from your time as a young child or a very young age. And if you are telling the truth in most cases, you must know you are going to be very uncomfortable. If let it be then, I just want to say to this committee, let it be. If we are going to be unpopular for not like that, but we know that we are a working nation and we know where we are getting to. That is why I was talking about affective. Because there is something that now it was like, I know it was a mistake when we spoke about 50-50, but I think we should just this thing away and say things as they are. And that's not going to give around shame. Yeah. Because we are right. We're going to talk about 2020. Talk about Abanyele who won't be there. And nothing will be, progressive from now. The plan so much and we come from a background that when you relate to it, it can be learned, it can be everything, but we were oppressed in many ways. As long as something like a Monday, and then you think, no, if I speak about this, I'll be offending so and so, and I'll be offending Amanda Bartley, I won't be recognized. No. I'm not saying this because I'm old now and I'm being president. You have to be president. Okay, Mali, can you?
No, thank you for wisdom. As we move South Africa forward, at least we are learning that the irrespective of your political association, women must always support one another. I'm not going to go back there, but I'm just saying we are learning. Chair, one issue that I have missed, but I think we're also not doing justice on it, is that in South Africa, when we talk about women empowerment, women emancipation, we only focus at women representation in parliament. What about private sector? What about the judiciary? What about the executive? Because we've done a lot. And I must tell you that even when we debate, we never speak about people who are heading Transnet, who are heading, what do you call them, Dana? Yeah, parastatals. We never speak about those things. It's true that the fight is 50-50. That makes those people to be where they are. And as a result, they think because of Bona, they are more educated than us. They fought for themselves to be there. Yeah, but no, I'm telling you, I was fortunate, let me say, I sat in the JSC, the Judiciary, the Judicial Service Commission. I will not mention the judge by the name, but he was applying for a judge, president of the court. Yeah? And that woman, I asked her a question deliberately. Do you think that you qualify for this position? Then she started saying, I thought you see yourself as a
as a candidate, what is this an affirmative action candidate or could you say that thing for as part of as an affirmative action it will also influence your appointment to that position? Surprisingly, she said no. No, because I'm qualified, I'm not a sort of no, we have to talk. And we have to, I have to explain to her that no, you are against so and so. Who is there, power source? You are against so and so, but because you feel that it depends that we need to bring in women, you're always there because of you are an affirmative candidate. I guess that you know why I'm raising this is because once they get into those inner positions, they carry a black against other black in particular, yeah? Women. That they must take over or they must then identify an opportunity for them to go. We need to guard against those things, Chairperson. I think this committee, rightfully so, it has got the power, it has got the capacity to do that. Let's find a way of making sure that we make all these senior female representatives. That's when they're not because of the intelligence, they have masters or doctorate or what, because of the candidate. We need to find a space somewhere where they might have an account as well. Maybe other young women that they've identified, that they have mentored, that they've, yeah, we need to find that that's a program.
People have said a mouthful. So far, Madam Nomes, we have to adjust this summer. The time now is 5:01. And I think I saw a lunch coming. And no one wants to have a cold lunch. I just wanted to know from you about these two, the gender barometer focusing on SA in 2013 and the other 2014 barometer for us. Are they very different?
Thank you, Chairperson. Not very much. I would be interlinking them when I present. Otherwise, in terms of time, we are very comfortable. We want it. We are not behind. Because I was talking with O'Brien. Before I go to the barometer, I want to round off the morning session, the resolutions that are taken by the panel, so that we are in the same, I have about 6 days, so that we know exactly what the plenary in terms of the PM plenary out of the other BPC, what resolutions they took. And secondly, we'll go to the gender barometer, also it's not many slides. And then we look, when we talk of 2014, we are looking that the time is now, 2015 is coming. What I would say as the legislative director, I think it will cover also the issues that are raised by Honorable Man. Where are we? What are other sectors doing? Because the study protocol looks at that broadly. So we need to cover our issue once more, where we think we will fit in. So in terms of time, I think I was aware that when we talked with members, we need to be flexible about time because we went to people who talk and speak. We are buying it on that.
Madam
Nomes,
so I'm going to do it this way. Can we go for lunch? And we'll allow you to give us the resolution. And the resolutions of the Southern team. And out of those resolutions, I'll allow 2 minutes each person for comment and discussion. So that we can allow you to put together the parameters. After you have given us the resolution, we put together the parameters, interlinking them as we have said, and then that will be a product discussion. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Last time.
Thank you.